Blog Talk Radio.
There we go. This is Deflection 2016, sponsored by Shared Sacrifice Media. I'm Gary Barkley. Matt Stannard is on with me. Tonight. It is Thursday, September 15th, 2016. We hadn't mentioned this before, but we will not have a show next week on the 22nd. We'll return on the 29th. But I have Matt Stannard on with me. Good evening, Matt. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Gary. How are you doing?
Doing great. I actually just became a landowner this week. I bought my very first house, so everyone should fear me. I'm now a landowner.
Yes, but not but not as much as you fear the bank.
Of course,
as a landowner, you're not really a landowner. By the way,
no. I really have title.
you're an indentured bank servant.
Correct.
And
I've been one of those for a long time, though.
in a different way, yes. As we were leading in before we went on the air, you were telling me about a very unusual dating site that you heard about today. Do you want to tell our listeners about that?
Very quickly, I found this on Wonket, I'll tell you about this, and then I'm going to tell you how I discovered Wonket and why I pay attention to it. Wonket is a great show. They're a great thing. Anyway, they tell the story today about a new dating site called Concealed Carry Match. It is designed for people who want to date other people who want to carry weapons wherever they go. Right now, they have memberships ranging at $10 a month. Depending on the level, from $10 a month to $150 a year.
I'm sure there are, but
right now they're running a special. You can use the first week to, you know, find your gun humping match for the first week for $5, if you use the secret passcode when you sign up, and that secret passcode is deplorable.
Deplorable.
So apparently we know who they're looking for, really, because, you know, deplorable lives matter. Anyway, I want to tell you a quick funny thing about this. The first article I ever read on Wonket, I love Wonket. I've been a fan of theirs for over a year now since I ever first read this. It was about Ted Cruz when they were running. And I know you have something you want to talk about, Matt, but I really want to mention this because I laughed so hard while I was reading this. I couldn't breathe. It was a story about Ted Cruz, and he was being interviewed by some right wing outfit, and the editor or the person who was writing the article, who was reviewing this interview for Wonket, said that Ted Cruz was being interviewed by this person. I don't remember who it was, but you know, I was, and what they said was Ted Cruz is being interviewed by, say, interviewer X. And so I was expecting some sort of hack journalism akin to two men using a double-sided dildo and backing into each other repeatedly.
Oh, God.
That's what started my love affair with Wonket.com. But that's really what you would expect, right? I mean, Ted Cruz talking to a right-wing outfit, it's really akin to that, right?
either that or a circle jerk. Two people
I just think the idea of that image, I mean, image of doing it. It was the
I clearly need some work on my terminology, but whatever that is, that's what I picture.
I know, you see Ted Cruz doing this.
That's really okay.
So that's my plug for Wonket.com. I mean, they call themselves a mommy blog with dick jokes, and they really are. And so Wonket.com, If you really want liberal commentary on the on what's happening in the day, wonkit.com is where to go. And I only brought that up because it was just the last article I happened to have opened before our segment, and if I hadn't, we wouldn't be talking about it. But
that's fine. That's fine. It's hilarious, and it is somewhat not just tangentially related to what I wanted to talk about tonight, which was this will take a couple of different angles as a lead-in. The first thing is what I wanted to talk about was interpersonal violence or direct physical violence, either physical or lots of yelling, in-your-face kind of yelling, but on an interpersonal and kind of violative level. And the fact that that has now reared its head again at Donald Trump events, at events for Donald Trump. I wanted to, there's a thing, not just what you would expect. I'm not just going to talk about the disgust of it or anything like that. And so part of the reason that this issue, that studying this issue, looking at this issue resonates for me is that I've spent some time as an advocate. I went back to school, and then when I got out of school, I was going through some career changes. I spent some time as an advocate in a domestic violence. There was a shelter, there was an agency, and so it was in service as well as shelter service for victims, doing victim advocacy, legal advocacy, resource advocacy, educating the community, that type of thing. And so I got to see a lot of respondents in domestic violence injunction hearings. These were people, mostly men, but there were people who had injunctions filed against them, or applications for injunctions, requests for restraining orders filed against them. And they're called respondents in the civil court system. And a domestic violence injunction is a civil injunction. It is not a criminal injunction. You can be arrested on assault charges that are domestic violence in nature, but this is a civil thing. You know, if you're a victim, you can go to a judge, you can apply for a restraining order, and it's a civil hearing. So these respondents, these guys mostly, obviously there were some women, tended to behave in very similar, somewhat narcissistic fashion. And sort of really into themselves and really into I can do what I want kind of thing with their attitude. There was very little. They were often really kind of weird in court, in terms of their defiance, almost in terms of defying the decorum of the court, as well as just sort of saying, I'm not an abuser. I'm just an extremely important person that can do whatever the heck you want. And so I say that because ever since the beginning of the Trump campaign, ever since the primary, the behavior that I see exhibited from Trump, from Donald Trump, and the behavior I see exhibited from many of his followers resembles the behavior of respondents in domestic violence hearings for me. I look at that and I go, this reminds me of that. That's a data point, and that's a data point. And those two data points seem very similar to me. I say that because this week, as you know, Gary, that has come back in the news. We hadn't heard. Since the primaries ended, we had not heard about egregious episodes of violence turning up at Trump events. But this week, at one event, there was a video that captured one man grabbing a male protester and slapping a female one. There's another situation in North Carolina where a man has been accused of assaulting a 69-year-old woman. There's video at another event that showed a private security guard who was working for Teen Tycoon, as I like to call them, yelling an obscenity to a person's face. And then another video that was released just prior to all of those events was a specially made video where some people had put together a montage of all of the racist and sexist emotives that have been said throughout, you know, these events. And I want to say, as someone who's been very critical of Hillary Clinton, very critical of the Democrats, and I'm not a Democrat, but I want to say that, you know, when people say, well, they're both the same, I will say, you know, we can talk about their policies, we can talk about, even speculate about their personalities, but this interpersonal violence is an element at Trump rallies and Trump events. It is not an element at Democratic rallies. And granted, Clinton does not do as many events as Trump does, but you never hear about people beating the crap out of other people at a Hillary Clinton event, and you never hear about it at most Democratic Party events. And you don't hear about it at most Republican Party events. This is something, Gary, that I have noticed in this election cycle has been very unique to one candidate, one person, and the events and people associated with that, and that is this display of violence, of intimate, you know, what you would call, you know, physical violence, direct, not systemic violence, but direct violence. And I think that's important. I think it's important to distinguish, because that is part and parcel of that campaign. And it's interesting to me because, as Kenneth Burke wrote in his in an essay called Rhetoric of Hitler's Battle, you know, when Hitler was giving speeches in beer halls, what would often happen is he would say these very provocative things and wait for fights to break out in the beer hall. And once the fights would break out, then these Nazi thugs would beat up the people that were fighting. And the end result was this display. This created this sort of spectacle. And the spectacle became part of the ideology. The spectacle became part of the messaging. And I can't help but feel that that's what's at work here, that violence is not an exception to Trumpian politics. It's part of the display. It's part of the show. And it's part of the message. You know, this sort of brutalization, this sort of, it's cool to be mean, it's cool to be brutal, it's cool to brutalize the weak. And I think that is part of the message that's being sent there. I know that was a really long-winded intro, but I wanted to kind of lay all of the context for that. And yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts on that, Gary.
Well, you know, I think that I don't disagree with anything you've said, and I'm not, and I definitely am not trying to in any way give any credence or give any validation to them. But at the end of the day, with everything you were describing, everything the as you called it, intimate violence, the actual violence against people, the weak, etc. What you called it was intimate violence is the word you used, and I prefer to call it impotent violence. These are people who know they have no power, who know they are about to lose all of the privilege that they've had before, privilege which they did not rightly enjoy in the first place. They are about to lose it, and they know that. I mean, this is the last election where white men, where white, straight, Christian, so-called Christian men, will be have any chance of actually controlling everything. It's the last one. Even if Donald Trump won, the fact is that the violence that they would spurn, that they would create, would backfire on them. You know, I remember a couple of years ago, it was in a Jon Stewart show, and he had you know, one of his faux journalists on there. And the journalist actually made a very poignant point, I think. He said that, you know what, you know, all these radical right wing, and this is before Trump, I mean, obviously, because Jon Stewart quit before the cycle, but the guy said, you know, all these right wingers, they think that they have all the guns. You know, they think that just because they have the guns that makes them right. Well, you know what, we're liberals, we got guns too. And at the end of the day, that's true. And so when you think about how, you know, these impotent ragers, and I'm going to call them that because that's exactly what they are. I mean, these are the people that are truly, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, Freud always said that penis envy was always something women had of men. But this is what these guys have. I mean, these are men who are not men. These are men who are not men. I mean, for the most part, I of course, you know, there's no way it's 100% because, you know, there are no straight lines in nature anyway. But there's no way it's 100%. But I can tell you right now, these impotent guys that are throwing punches at 69-year-old women with oxygen masks on their face, I can promise you right now that guy never put on a uniform. And for some reason, because his fear, whatever it is that kept him from it, his own cowardice, whatever it is that keeps him awake at night, his fear of his own shadow, because that's what it is, his fear of his own shadow that keeps him up at night, he resents that. He resents his own fear. He resents his own inadequacies. He resents the fact that Jose, the guy who's mowing his lawn, might very well in the next 10 years make as much money as he does or more. And that kind of thing sparks that kind of fear, and they naturally think that violence is the way to go about it. The only problem is that even if Donald Trump became president, I can promise you right now, there is never going to be an SS division Donald Trump running through this country. We will not allow it. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Donald Trump's red shirts, you know, if Donald Trump wins and red shirts start running through the streets, you know, a lot of us liberals got guns too. You know, I hear, I've heard so many times, you know, at rallies, people show up with guns and say, you know, we'll take up our guns and Second Amendment remedies. You know, they go both ways. I do not want violence. I do not want this country to descend into that. But the fact is that if Donald Trump becomes president, we might not have a choice. And I'm not saying we need to start, you know, planning on going into bunkers and some sort of overt kind of overthrow the government kind of thing. But at the end of the day, Donald Trump becoming president of the United States is nothing less than the Nazis controlling our government. And I can promise you right now that the vast majority of people, because if Donald Trump wins, it will be election fraud, I promise you, that did it. If Donald Trump becomes president, you know, it's an illegitimate presidency. And I sound like a right winger, only I sound like I'm coming from the left. But at the end of the day, why shouldn't I use the same rhetoric as they do? I mean, if they truly fear that Hillary Clinton is going to come for their guns, they've been fearing that of Obama for the last 8 years, and Obama hasn't taken their guns, and Hillary has never. I mean, I don't think guns are a problem for them. Their problem is that a woman would be in charge. And at the end of the day, you know what?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I know. Finish. Please finish your thought.
No, I'm just. I know. I'm getting long winded here, and I didn't mean to take away your the wind.
I didn't want to cut you off.
No. The thing is, I just don't see why it absolutely pisses me off and always has that somehow Republican presidents are always legitimate and anybody that questions them is unpatriotic. But when a Democrat becomes president, suddenly, you know, it's all fair game and, you know, nothing is, you know, we can't go fight a war that a Democrat started or a Democrat is defending or anything like that. But if it's a Republican who wants to start an unjustified war to go steal somebody's oil, then, you know, oh, hey, yeah, you can't question that. I am just absolutely sick that only patriots wear flag lapel pins. I will not wear one myself. I will not. I have never said the pledge. I mean, other than when I was a school kid and didn't know better, I haven't said the Pledge of Allegiance since then. Even when I was in the Army, I wouldn't say it. And nobody could say anything about it because it is not an official thing. You can't force me to say this, and I won't say it. And I never have because I have always believed because the flag is a symbol. And you know what? The flag is a symbol. I agree with that. It is. But the fact is that I will not pledge allegiance to the symbol. That's not it. I will not do it. Pledge is always to the Constitution.
One thing that I want to isolate about one of the things that you said was the way in which, you know, this question of presidential legitimacy. You know, the treatment of the other party as illegitimate, which, and also sort of the, you know, to me, there's also this sort of stubbornness. I certainly perceive that as being, you know, part of, in at least recently, in, you know, part of the, of Republican iterations of government more than Democratic ones. At the same time, I've always been a real fierce critic of the Democratic Party. Oftentimes, I think I've even held the Democratic Party up to a tougher standard and a higher standard than Republicans. But I also think that I kind of led the conversation with this notion of violence, and part of what we're seeing in the Trump campaign is a sort of intensification of the know-nothingism that I think is part of that. You know, I think know-nothingism was part of the Republican narrative of, for example, of Barack Obama not being a U.S. citizen, or the narrative of Barack Obama being a Muslim, or all of these other, you know, these other things that the Republicans treated as you know, as slanders that they were making against the Democratic Party. And the reason I say that is that the same ideology that leads you to refuse to accept evidence, to refuse to accept rational discourse, and is the same ideology in a different form that makes you punch someone in the face at a political event. But there is, to me, there is a thread, a kind of ideological thread, that connects the refusal to participate in reasoned discourse with the desire to punch someone in the face, or the, you know, with the, or punching someone in the face almost, you might say, as a political strategy. And I think in all of that, there is this intrinsic argument that politics is all about power anyway. And if Barack Obama was elected president, that's because he was better able to manipulate the system and use his power than we were. And so we have to power right back. This is not about deliberation. This is not about process. It's not really about democracy. You know, it's about power. And so, you know, sort of the more powerful entities in that equation use that power by manipulation, by propaganda, by telling lies, by refusing to accept evidence, you know, whether it's of, you know, global climate change or Obama's citizenship or whatever. And then the least powerful, in a lot of ways, the least powerful elements of that movement will resort to punching people in the face. And so I think there's that connection between the two. Both are kind of acts of violence, you know, but birtherism or climate denial are acts of discursive violence, acts of intellectual violence, and then you've got punching someone in the face.
Well, you know, and this kind of ties in, but not exactly. Think of it as a dotted line rather than a direct line. But I've been reading for actually I like to read books several times so that I can really get the gist of it and pick up stuff that I missed the first time around. For example, I've read War and Peace like about 10 times, and it gets better every time. And it really does. I mean, I suggest reading the whole unabridged version. Just do it and then read it again and again. And over the course of my life, I've read it about 10 times. But I've read this book that I actually picked up at a thrift store for $2. It's a nice, thick book. It's about operational military, about military operations, a historical perspective of World War II, called Stalingrad to Berlin, The German Defeat in the East, by Earl Zimke. And the reason I bring this up right now is because as the war on the Eastern Front in the Soviet Union got worse and worse, Hitler became more. And I know I'm breaking that. What is it called? But anyway, the reason I bring this up is because as the war got worse and worse on the Eastern Front, Hitler became more and more fanatical. He basically said, we cannot lose to these people who are lesser than us, and therefore we cannot retreat anywhere, which became basically a solid defense. You know, every little town had to be defended to the utmost, when it would have been better to give up a thing, regroup, and attack from the left. You know, they didn't do that. They just, you know, we have to hold everything that we've got. If we lose it, then we lose it, and we'll never get it back. And of course, that ended up costing him the war. And this is the kind of thing that we need to expect. Even if we didn't get a Stalingrad, or even if we didn't get a World War II or something like that from Donald Trump, the fact is that he would create such havoc in the world of markets. I mean, because the man doesn't know anything about business at all. I mean, a businessman actually pays his bills. Deadbeat Donald doesn't pay his bills. And a person who he would sell us down the, he would sell this whole country down the drain, or sell us out to the highest international bidder. It doesn't matter who that bidder is. That bidder could be, if Muammar Gaddafi were still alive, Muammar Gaddafi. It could be the North Korean Kim Jong-un. You know, it could be anybody that would give advantage to Donald Trump himself. He has no moral center, no patriotic core whatsoever. He is all about what will benefit Donald Trump today, here and now. And I promise you, if Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, of course he won't, but if he did, I mean, that's the end of our country. I mean, you know, we hear that from the right wing, too. You know, they say the same thing. Oh, if Hillary becomes, you know, it's the end of our country. It's not really the end of our country, because she's just going to sell us out piecemeal. Basically, she gives basically, Hillary Clinton is the typical Democrat who will say, hey, the Republicans are offering you a shit sandwich. You know what? I'm offering you a shit sandwich, but I'm going to put sprinkles on it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we get.
Well, I'm glad you acknowledge that. And I mean, but if you're saying, I mean, I guess all I would say is that ruthlessness, the ruthlessness that you're talking about, and the unmoored ruthlessness, it's not the controlled ruthlessness of the Democrats. It's this other thing. And I think that it
has
parallels to Nazism. It's, you know, I'm not saying it's Nazism. You know, but what I'm saying is that it is of that intensified kind. You know, what Trumpism is, it's what's left over of, you know, that of conservative philosophy when the rationality of conservative philosophy melts away or is stripped away or is stripped down. And so, you know, that's what you've got. You know, and I would say that is part, you know, that the punch in the face is part of the message.
Yeah.
It's not separate from the message. It's not exceptional. It's not,
it is the message.
Well, Trump
it
has a message, yeah. And then people also punch people in the face at his events. It's part of the ideology, because, again, if you just listen to the guy, you know, part of the ideology is we need strength, and strength means willingness to punch first and ask questions later. And so I think that, you know, I think that you can't separate what is being said in the campaign, all of the subtextual messages that campaign is saying, and then also the fact that people are actually doing violence to other people in the course of the campaign.
And, you know, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. You're absolutely right. I like that uncontrolled, you know, the idea of the uncontrolled, of the lack of control to it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that when it comes down to it, Donald Trump, it is all about Donald Trump, no doubt. But the question is, you know, we need strength. But the question is, where did that strength come from? And do you really think any of the cowards in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party that are in the House of Representatives or the Senate would actually draft people to go into the war? I mean, when Donald Trump starts these trade wars because this is what happened. Donald Trump will start trade wars, you know, right? If he starts trade wars actually sometimes flare up into real wars, you know, with bullets flying and all that. And I want to know, which of the people in the Republican Party who would not stand with Trump, they don't endorse him, but they don't, you know, denounce him either.
Mm-hmm.
The people who just say, hey, I'm a Republican, but I, you know, I'm distancing myself. I'm just a Republican. I'm not a Donald Trump
right.
Republican. I'm just a Republican in office. How
so
do you distance yourself from that?
I just want to say along those lines that, you know, you're saying, well, where's that power going to come from? And that is the point. That question is the point, because like these respondents – In these domestic violence injunction hearings, Trump finds strength from hurting people that he perceives to be weaker than him, and he tells his followers, either explicitly or implicitly, to do the same thing, beat up on the weak. That is where they believe that power comes from. They believe that the source of the power is in being a bully, basically, and that's what is needed to happen. So obviously it's not, you know, the kind of power that you need to be like a president or something.
Exactly.
It's that thuggery. And I know that we are,
well,
you know,
we're out of time,
we are
but we can
just out of time.
We're not. Yeah, we're not streaming, but the podcast is going on, so we can continue on the conversation if you want to for a few minutes. But you're absolutely right. I think that from the standpoint mm-hmm. of, you know, that's something that gets you, that could get you elected. It's true. It very well could. But at the end of the day, do you really think this country is going to follow you down the rabbit hole into its own destruction? I mean, Rome fell. Rome finally crumbled eventually. And of course, Nazi Germany, because of its own aggression, ended up being defeated. I mean, where does the American democracy end in that spectrum? I mean, one that just crumbles, you know, just dies a slow, lingering death, or one that is totally destroyed by its enemies from without. I mean, do you really think Donald Trump could rally? I mean, think about it. I mean, Donald Trump's supporters are either elderly or they're overweight. Simpletons who are not going to be allowed into the military, let alone lead it. And I can promise you right now that the 18-year-olds who might have no other way place to go, as sad as it is, who might have no other place to go than the military for a job and for health care and all the things that we need, or even for the hopes of paying for college someday, because, you know, the Democrats aren't going to solve that problem either. Those people who make those choices, how is Donald Trump going to be able to create a draft? And if he did, how many people would just say, you know what, I'll go to jail for 5 years. I'd rather do that than go fight your criminal war.
Yeah, or leave the country or do any one of a number of things. I think you've hit on something, and I think maybe we'll have to discuss this during the regular portion of the podcast when we do this in 2 weeks. But that is – you know, I think that if Trump were to get elected, see, if Clinton gets elected, even people that are not very crazy about Clinton are going to say, well, this is just going to be, you know, 4 or 8 more years of Obama. You know, this is not going to be really that different. And we can debate about that. We can talk about that. But that's a lot of people are going to say that. I think, you know, there will be refuseniks if Trump is elected. If Trump becomes
one of
president, there will be refuseniks. There will be people who will just out and out say, no, not this guy, no way, no how. And I think that's going to be a real interesting thing to watch. And to be part of.
Yeah, I think that's something we could probably the individually or together, we could probably pen something very interesting for Political Context, for the relaunch of politicalcontext.org sometime in the future. We're a little bit over time. I know if you're listening to the podcast, to the recorded podcast, we've gone over time, but hopefully the discussion between Matt and myself interested you to stay to the end. But Matt, I think that we've gone about 3 minutes over. If you want to say a few parting words, that would be great, and then we can go ahead and put our outro.
We will be back in 2 weeks, and I would love for everyone to visit politicalcontext.org and a new publication I've started called cowboysonthecommons.org, and maybe we'll talk about those a little bit in future shows as well. But it's been a pleasure as always.
Absolutely, it's a great. I love these Thursday shows. Looking forward to going on through the election. I'm sure it's just going to get more interesting from here. I'm Gary Barkley for Shared Sacrifice. We're doing Deflection 2016, and I thank Matt Stannard as my co-host tonight. And we hope you all will join us next week, or I'm sorry, 2 weeks from now on the 29th of September, 9 p.m. Mountain Time. I guess that'll be 11 p.m. Eastern Time, or of course, always at blogtalkradio.com in the archive. I hope everyone has a good evening. Have a good night.
Good evening, everybody.